Welcome to Rubber Band Live, the Australian recruitment and talent acquisition vodcast and podcast. I am Eden Haddock, your host and the creator of Rubber Band, the recruitment network for all. Let's go live. And we are live. Welcome, listeners, to today's episode of Rubber Band Live, which is Recruitment Chinwag with Petey Wang. Now, before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that I live and work on, the Wadawurrung and Dja Wurrung people. I recognise their continuing connection to the land and waterways. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and I would like to extend this to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Welcome to Recruitment Chinwag, Petey Wang. How you doing?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing?
I'm also fabulous. And you look fabulous today as well. I'm feeling a little bit in my, you know, sweaty T-shirt. It's like in the 30s.
Oh, no, I'm just working today. My full working from home, just casual gear, just, you know, chilling.
Oh, well, amazing. And work from home is great, right? I'm in the office today, so I've got an excuse to be a bit sweaty. But anyway, that's another story. I'm so excited that you are joining me today for a Chinwag, Petey.
I'm so honoured to be here.
Oh, it's just amazing. I met you at the Australian Talent Conference, and yourself and your friends or your team were sitting behind me, and I just thought you were such a cool crew. A few little comments that you're making to each other, I was like, yeah, these are my kind of people. So I'm gonna get to know Petey. You're someone I've been dying to chat to. So thank you once again.
Yeah. We're definitely a loud bunch, and we definitely are we can be a little bit opinionated, but, you know, it's great. It's great to have that interaction. But, yeah, thank you.
I'll tell you, I'll confess, and you know, this is a little bit cheeky, but one thing that really made me chuckle is there was one of the presenters that went up, and he was quite a good-looking guy, and I was thinking in my head, oh, he's cute. And then I heard one of your friends say the same thing. I was like, oh, I love these people. They're amazing.
Single girl sitting in a room, we're always, you know, we always have our eyes out. You just never know.
Oh, I love it. Well, so always when we start these Chinwags, it's really, you know, going back in the past to start with and getting to know you as a person, Petey. So can you tell us about your history and growing up and your childhood, and can you take us way back in your journey?
Absolutely, yeah. So I was born and raised in China, and I migrated to New Zealand when I was 11 with my mother. And it was obviously a really crazy culture shock, but it was also very, like, interesting and fascinating. And then as Asian parents, they always, you know, think that your child's going to grow up to be a doctor or be a, you know, a lawyer. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm just not smart enough. So I decided to pursue my passion, and I became a makeup artist for 7 years. Oh. And yeah, so I did that. Worked for some really, reputable brands within the industry, perfect my craft within the artistry side of things, and was freelancing as well as working for a dedicated brand. But after 7 years, I kind of just was like, you know what, like, it's, I love that I have the passion for it, but it's not the most sustainable industry to be a part of, given how drastic the industry has changed and evolved during the 7 years I was, you know, a part of that. So I was kind of just looking out to see, you know, what was the next thing for me. And then I kind of fell into recruitment, like, you know, most people here in the recruitment industry. I'm like, yeah, so did I.
Oh, well, I can't wait to hear more about that. I want to just go back a little bit. Did you you went to high school in New Zealand?
I did, yes.
Yeah, and then did you have to study makeup artistry? Like, was that something that you needed to, or was it just a natural flair that you had?
Yeah, it was a natural flair that I had. So I had really bad acne in my teenage years. So I used to steal my mom's makeup from her drawers and then put them on before I go to school, and then quickly rub them off before I come home. But then I got really good at it. Like, I just, like, I started with just a bit of foundation to cover up, and then people were like, oh, you look a bit pale. And I was like, okay, I'll put some blush and bronzer on. And then you're like, oh, your eyes look a bit, you know. And it was just, it kind of starts adding on slowly. And before you know it, like, I was doing all the girls' makeup, and, you know, it was great. And then when I left school, I just thought, well, if I'm really good at it naturally, why don't I just, you know, work for a brand that can teach me on the job? And then that's kind of how I kickstart my career. Yeah.
Amazing. And I love, there are so many people like us. I mean, I like you, I finished high school and I followed my creative passion, which was floristry. And I did that for a number of years. I did that until I was 30 years old. But
that's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, and similar to makeup artistry, like it's heartbreaking for kids like us that when we're exploring that creative career, that it's hard for it to be an ongoing career because it just doesn't pay well enough. Like creatives are, I mean, we're starving artists, right? And it really sucks because it's something special that we have that no one else has. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it depends on, obviously, what you want out of life as well, I guess. You know, I still have a lot of friends that have still dedicated themselves in the beauty industry. Obviously, they've got, you know, a side hustle going on, or they've diverted their business model or their strategy into maybe doing more advisory kind of in capacity, or working in collaboration with agencies or doing shows. But I think it really depends on what you want out of life. And I feel like when I had a look through, when I reflecting on what I wanted, you know, from my life, I was like, I need something that's going to be sustainable, that's paying enough. And, you know, I still do makeup on like myself, of course, but then also with friends. So I'm not completely, you know, I haven't completely detached myself from the industry. I'm still, you know, I still have a high interest within the industry and how it's evolved and all of that. But it's, yeah, I'm just not actually focusing that as a career path anymore.
Yeah, but you need it. Like we need it, right? Like, and I think it makes us better professionals because we're able to have that outlet that we can free our mind and not get stuck in that recruitment mundane.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, where it's just all that tension at times. Yeah. So,
you know, the one thing I really appreciate about my journey is I've always loved people. And throughout makeup, I met so many interesting people and so many interesting stories. And I feel like it really kind of put on a foundation for me to know how to interact and obviously get the best response and outcome from interactions. So when you're obviously working for a company, like as a counter makeup artist, you're selling products, you're, you know, you're interacting, you're ensuring that they're getting obviously the results they're looking for. So I think that actually some of the skills that I didn't think that I was gaining actually come to fruition when I moved into the recruitment world. So, you know, it's all hand in hand. It's all also about, you know, what you take in and how you take them all in.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. I think all of that, you know, lived experience, regardless of where you commenced your career. I talk to a lot of people on this podcast that still reflect on the time that they worked at the counter at McDonald's and that
experience.
Yeah, they're still applying into their careers now that they're talent acquisition leaders. Like it all forms a part of who we are. 100%. Now, really interesting, you know, you fell into recruitment just like we all did. How did that all come about? Makeup artist to recruitment. How did it happen? Yeah.
So makeup was a very niche market. So when I decided to branch out from beauty, I was a little bit more harder for me to find something. Unlike most retail management positions, you can move into like an operations role or, you know, something that's quite similar, sales, marketing. But for makeup, I feel like there was a stigma or a stereotype of the makeup girls. They just do beauty. They just put makeup on people. They're not really selling anything. So I think, you know, I had some challenges finding a right role. Also, I didn't really know what I wanted. So my partner at the time suggested me to go into an agency and, you know, go to a couple of agencies and start obviously building a professional profile with agency recruiters, so they can obviously basically sell me to other organizations.
Yes,
that's
kind
of just I got it. So, and I was like, okay, cool. I went, I think I was four or five agencies that I went in and obviously did my profile for, and the experience were very different. Some were very attentive, were very, you know, inclusive, and they really was advisors. They were really advising, you know, how they can support you, but also giving you options for you to choose from, whether there are some other agencies just like, okay, so what do you want? How can So I was like, okay, well, I can actually do your job better than you. Like, obviously, given my role, my last role in beauty, where I was in a managerial position. So I did a lot of recruitment for my team as well. So, you know, you obviously have that exposure and experience. And I remember sitting in on one of the agencies and being like, I can do this job like a lot better than you. So kind of it was an idea that brewed in my head. And then I started chatting to an agency manager who essentially took me as his project. And I said to him one day while we're discussing about potential position that he was putting me forward for, I was like, actually, can I just ask a question? I was like, are you guys hiring any recruiters at the moment? Like, I saw actually a position going on. He was like, actually, I was going to ask you. That was my next question for you. He was like, I just, your presence and how you present yourself and, you know, just the way you communicate, I think you actually be a really great recruiter. And I was like, oh my God, like minds think alike. So I did a had like, I think it was a trial day on in the agency, kind of got a bit of understanding of what they do, what the day-to-day life, you know, is like for a recruiter, and got a bit of understanding of the role and what it entails. And I was like, I would love to give this a go. And they were obviously kind enough to take me on. So that's kind of how I started my journey within recruitment.
So when you made that decision in your head, when you're like, I want to give this a crack, what was it about the recruitment industry and that motivated you? And has it met those expectations of, you know, that time when you were interviewing? Tell me about that.
I think the advisory piece really spoke to me. I think when I was sitting with the couple of recruiters, I was really genuinely had a presence to help me find the right role. I think that really touched me. I'm like, okay, you're giving me options that I would never even dreamed of, you know, working as a beauty girl. Now you're telling me how my transferable skills can actually lead me to doing things outside of retail. I can move into an EA position potentially with, you know, how I speak, or moving into, more fashion-based, you know, just different options. And also just how they coached me on how my resume writing, how my interview skills, just all these things. I was like, okay, this is actually quite fulfilling. This could actually be really fulfilling. So, and I have always been within beauty in my last couple of years, I was in managerial position. So I've always had a presence of how do I develop my team into the next role. So I think that really spoke to me, and I was resonating to me. So I was like, okay, this could be really interesting. And I feel like now that I've been in the industry for almost 7 years now, there are definitely components of that I feel like I have achieved, and continue is still obviously, you know, doing. But I also feel like there are a lot of things that I assumed that was going to happen, kind of got overshadowed by the reality of what recruitment really is, especially when you work in agency recruitment. So, you know, when the sales component, kicks in, there are certain things that, you know, gets overshadowed by that. But
Yeah, it is. It's the balance, right? And I think
absolutely.
It's the balance, with the volume of, I know on reflection, when I look back, when I first started in recruitment, I didn't realize just how busy I was going to have to be in agency recruitment to survive. You know, quite often you think, oh, I'm going to be able to spend so much time career coaching with these candidates. Yeah. And then you realize it becomes quite a small window of time that you have to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I feel like when I first got into recruitment within an agency, the feedback was also, you spend a lot of time with your candidates where you really should be spending a lot of time with your clients. And I'm like, but the candidates are what's going to get us placement. So, you know, you got to build that rapport. But I think the one thing that I was really proud of is that during my agency recruitment, era, my fallout rates was extremely low because I really made sure that I was sending them out to jobs that I genuinely believed that they will succeed in. And I think ultimately that benefited both the candidates and the clients that I was servicing, because they obviously both got what they wanted. And I feel like by me being attentive to both my clients and my candidates, and actually spending that extra bit of time with my candidates, actually set them up for success for everyone. Yeah.
Excellent. Agreed. Agreed. Because it's, yeah, absolutely. And you apply that internally as well because you've got
absolutely
quality metrics, right? So
100%.
I completely agree with that, Petey. How long did you stay in the agency world?
I think almost 3 years.
3 years. And yeah. How long have you been internal now?
Coming up 4 years.
4 years. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we'll talk about that in a moment, but I'm keen to hear, you know, throughout your now, what have we gone for, 5, 6, 7 years? Sorry, I can't count, you know, come on. I've got blonde hair at the moment, so that was my blonde moment.
I love it. I was going to say, I really like it.
Oh, thank you. It's growing out. But, yeah, there we go. You can help me with some matching. Maybe the eyebrows are a little bit too dark. But, anyway, we'll talk about that offline with your makeup skills. But, yeah, tell me about, you know, being 7 years now in, you know, recruitment and talent acquisition, what do you think some of the biggest lessons you've learned have been over the years?
I think there's, since I've come on board within the industry to how it's evolved in the last 7 years, I feel like there's definitely a shift from just recruiters to recruitment advisors. I think companies are starting to, well, at least the companies that I've serviced at are starting to recognize the importance of the recruitment function. I feel like even when I was transitioning from agency recruitment to internal, the recruitment was just a function. It was just to get people into the door. A lot of the companies whether I serviced with an agency form or when I first joined an internal capacity, it was more so, okay, you're just here to fill roles. So don't worry about anything to do with people and culture, that we have a dedicated team to do that. Just focus on getting the people in. But I feel like more and more so, and given the fact that I'm quite an outspoken person as well, I always inject myself into certain conversations and I'm like, okay, but I have, you know, an opinion on this and I have an opinion on this. But I'm just thankful that, you know, the leaders that I've worked alongside have always appreciated my voice. And I was like, okay, they'll take it on board. So I feel like I have slowly transitioned myself from just being a recruiter into a business advisor, which I can understand what the overall objective of the business is, but then obviously being able to provide my opinion and thoughts and advice to how we can obviously support that overall objective of the business. Yeah, but I feel like you hear more so now with across the industry as well. It's, you know, transitioning into an advisory, I guess, capacity is definitely going to be more consistent and concise with how our industry has transitioned. So, yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I think HR functions are now finally truly, and businesses as well, seeing the value of the talent acquisition team. And I know when I first started in internal recruitment, we were very operational and it was very just fill the roles. And I think the courage of people like yourself and like myself and you know, met many people in the industry that were around in those days that were able to have those conversations, inject themselves into those conversations and show their expertise. So, you know, well done, Petey, for being a part of that and playing a part of that, because we are seeing the industry really, really shifting as more of a step up and say, hey, we can add so much value to your organisation than just bringing in employees.
100%.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's also like the one thing that I noticed when I moved an internal, especially, is that there's a huge disconnect with candidates and the people operations team, whether it's the managers or the senior managers or even HR, because they don't have the initial contact with the candidates. They don't actually really know what's happening out in the market or what the candidates actually want. They get the piece once they've hired. Prior to that, they've been hired. They actually don't know that person, you know, the way we do. So by spending the time with the candidates and actually, diving into certain dialogues, you actually understand that they're more than just who they are on their resume. They're actually
exactly
a personal, they have goals, they have ambitions, you know, they have things that they want to achieve in life. And how can we as an organization support them so we can also get the best out of them?
Yeah,
I think by actually presenting that to the business to showcase that, you know, they were like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Now I see why it's important to listen to the voice of, you know, recruiters. Yeah,
because we are representing them, right?
And absolutely.
And when you hire for future potential and you're hiring people and understanding what their career motivators are, or to your point, what they want to achieve from life, and giving them an opportunity to stretch in that role, you then have a highly engaged employee because they're getting opportunities rather than just a carbon copy of someone's CV that matches your PD, right? So we hold that power because we're representing them. I think it's absolutely spot on, PD.
Mm. Yeah. And one other thing is, when I first started in the internal, I guess, space, like, I visited all my sites and it was never done before. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, like, sometimes the recruiters will come in with the HR, they'll spend here for 20 minutes and they'll leave. But I actually, you know, spent time on site with each, whether it was a store or whether it was, you know, a kitchen or whatever that is, just to know actually what the culture is like, what the actual manager of that site wants, you know, out of this person that's coming on board. And I think by doing so, it also closed a lot of the gaps that was missing, that we couldn't identify where they were or why has the recruitment strategy failed again and again in the past, is because we actually haven't identified the needs of what the actual business wants. We obviously have, you know, a comprehensive understanding of, the broader business wants as that one particular side. But actually, when you actually drill it down to the nitty-gritties, it's actually completely different than just
it can be.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a completely different proposition. You're absolutely spot on. I believe that as well. In every different business unit, there's always nuances and there's always differences, and you've got to be able to talk to candidates about that to find, you know, that right for the team. Now, Petey, I really want to know, and I think most importantly, this question, what are you most passionate about?
I'm most passionate about, I think it's changed over the years. I feel like at first when I joined, it's more so just so that we as recruiters can be recognized as, you know, a key function within the organization. Mm. I feel like we've done it together as a whole. I feel like all the professionals within the industry have done that. But I feel like now, personally, I think my passion is to really develop the next gen of talents and for, I guess, organizations to see the next gen of candidates and talents are not going to be wanting the same things as what we wanted. In 5-10 years time, there's going to be a huge workforce change because the next generation just wants different things. They don't want to work to live. They want to live. They want to have a fulfilling career, but at the same time they want to live their lives. So it's about how do we prepare our organization so that when that day comes, we're not just being, you know, shocked to our core because of, you know, their expectations, but also, you know, being considerate of, you know, D&I strategies, that's going to be really effective. I feel like there's a lot of organizations out there that comes up with, you know, all these sometimes quite outrageous initiatives that doesn't actually benefit anyone, but to make the business look good. So I really want to, you know, somehow influence organizations to start actually, you know, come up with strategies or initiative that's going to actually benefit the people. Yeah. So I think these are my two focus at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging as well, Petey. And I think I agree with you. I think some organizations will treat it as, we'll tick this box, that's something that we need to do for our employees. And sometimes those initiatives just don't, they're not hitting the mark, right? Yeah. And I think what's missing is the consultation with those communities. You know, And I think a lot of organisations just kind of follow the lead of our competitors doing this, or this feels like the right thing to do, and it's all coming from a really good place, but they're missing that consultation. I don't know if you agree. That's
absolutely.
What I,
Absolutely. Yeah. I have been to a couple of roundtables and spoke to, you know, some of the co-chairs or chairs of organizations looking after DEIB. And some of the initiatives, I'm like, okay, that's interesting. But I was like, who signed this off? I'm always the person that's like, I ask the annoying questions. I'm the person that's asking the uncomfortable questions. And I'll always be like, okay, so like, how does that actually benefit the people working in your organizations or the broader community? Because to me, that once this campaign goes, no one's going to actually benefit from anything. It's going to make your organization look amazing for the next 5 to 6 weeks or however long this campaign is running. But how is this going to actually benefit the people? Like, what is your employee and the broader community going to benefit from this? And they're like, well, we just thought that's what people wanted. We just thought they just wanted to see a representation. I'm like, well, I think we're past that point of seeing a representation now. I think we need to see actual actions. In this day and age, we need real initiatives that's going to really benefit the people and not just, you know, as a flag that's been waving in the air. So, oh, yeah, we see you guys, because we are seeing. We're not.
Yes, of course, we are.
We've been seeing for a long time now. So now we want real changes that's going to actually, you know, help us further integrate into society and, you know, to do better. Yeah.
Is there anything, if you're comfortable to share, it's okay. If not, like, is there anything that you would really like to see, you know, change? Like some of those changes that we want to see? Are there any examples?
I feel like open and concise conversations are really important. And I don't believe organizations, especially big corporations, I don't feel like they're doing that. Mm. I feel like, you know, they will send a mass survey out and then they'll focus on some of the results from these surveys and be like, oh, okay, this is what we think we should be doing, without actually inviting some of these individuals into an office and be like, hey, this is what your feedback has, you know, on the survey. Can you dive us a little bit deeper in regards to what you meant by that and how are you feeling? And, you know, I don't feel like these conversations are happening, given, you know, a lot of the things that we've seen in the recent years. It's like, okay, this is definitely not from a trans person. This is definitely not from a gay person. This is not actually what we want. Mm. If you actually just have spoken to someone, you would know that this is actually very surface leveled. Like, you know, for me, like when I see someone throwing the trans flag or, you know, having a trans representation on their campaign, I'm like, that, how does that actually benefit my community? Like, a lot of people that identifies within the trans community, they are still resorted to, you know, sex works because they genuinely don't find that they will be able to find an organization that gives them the feeling of belonging, that is going to embrace them for who they are, that's going to coach and, you know, develop them into a successful leader or worker or, you know, anything. So I feel like there's a lot of work that should have been done already, but because organizations haven't actually had the time to reach out and have these conversations, a lot of the things just being disregarded. And I feel like that's really sad, because some of these things, you know, you've seen in the industry, it's like, okay, if you had all this money to do this, realistically, you could have spent half of that and done something way more impactful.
Exactly.
So, and that only takes, and realistically, to change that, it takes just a couple conversations.
Yeah. And it is, it's going right back to what we were saying earlier. It's consultation with our community.
Yeah.
And we do want to talk, right? Yeah. Like, we want to talk, and we want to advise.
And this is where I hold our community, like, accountable as well. I'm like, if there is an opportunity for you to speak up, speak up.
Yes.
I do feel like people choose to stay silent, but then when they don't actually get what they want, they kind of whinge a little. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, if you have an opinion, if you think something should change, if you think an organization can do better, speak up, because you know, it also takes us to be like, okay, actually what you're doing is kind of low-key tone deaf, you know, but like, let's change that. How do we make it better? How do we make this actually more impactful? But I feel like, you know, people are still too afraid to speak up.
Again, so, I agree. Because you're scared to be critical, but you're not being critical. You're advising, and that advice is going to make such a huge impact, not only to people like ourselves, right, but also to our community, but to the organization, because the richness of diversity and what that does for an organization, not just in terms of culture benefits, but bottom line, because it's representing the vast community of Australia. Yeah. Our voices need to perform part of that decision making, right? Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
No, agreed. Well, look, we're running out of time. I could talk to you for ages, Petey, and I really want to. But tell me, what would be – oh, firstly, tell me about your current role. What are you up to at the moment, Petey?
So I am currently talent business partner for an organization called Only About Children. So I've moved into education, which is very exciting. And it's been very fulfilling. It's a very wholesome business. I just love what we do and I'm very happy. It's not something that I would have ever thought of. And then a friend of mine actually worked for this business and was like, actually, would you consider us? And then I did some research and met with the head of people and culture. Our vision just aligned. Yeah. And I was like, you know, when you get that feeling, you're like, okay, I'm going to be very happy here. And I've been here 6 months now and I feel so fulfilled every single day. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear. It's so great to hear that perfect match happens and it brings
out our
work. And you're very talented and very passionate. And I'm so glad that you found that environment that you just adore, right? And a leader that inspires you. It's great. Well, finally, Petey, what would be your last piece of advice for anyone working in recruitment or perhaps even considering a career in recruitment?
I think for the people that are currently working in recruitment is keep evolving. And there's a lot of things coming our way, e.g. AI. I feel like a lot of people are very, feel very daunted by the idea of that. But I'm like, we will never be replaced. It's about how do we evolve with everything that's coming our way. And for anyone that's coming into the industry, I would just say, try both agency and internal and find out what kind of recruiter you want to be. And and who you want to be in this environment, because it could go either way, and you can be successful either way. So it's just about being true to yourself and being true to what you actually want to be doing. Yeah,
amazing advice. Thank you so much, Petey. It has been an absolute pleasure having a chinwag with you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining. And I can't wait to see you again soon. I don't know, there'll be another event coming up. You're Sydney-based, aren't you?
I'm sure I'll
see you in Sydney soon. But again, thank you so much for joining. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you today.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.